I'd like to introduce Ani Williams right now. Ani Williams is a world-renowned harpist and singer and has recorded more than 24 albums of original sacred music based on ancient spiritual traditions. She has done seminal work in the study of sound healing and the relationship between musical tones, the human voice, and healing. Ani has been exploring the role of Mary Magdalene in the emerging feminine since 1987 and guiding women's pilgrimages to Magdalene sites in France, Britain, and Egypt. Her research of the feminine disciples in the Gnostic texts has resulted in recordings dedicated to Magdalene and Sophia with music and chant in Aramaic, Hebrew and Egyptian languages, incorporating ancient Middle Eastern musical scales. Her writings on Mary Magdalene blend history with poetic depth, and she is currently co-producing a series of documentary films on Magdalene's role in the Grail Mysteries. Ani has been recording her enchanting style of music since 1981, and has performed internationally since 1985 throughout the world. In May 2006, the Travel Channel featured Ani's music and presentation in Roslyn Chapel, Scotland, for a special program on the Da Vinci Code material. Ani has appeared on numerous television and radio programs, including having her music aired on the syndicated FM show Music from the Hearts of Space. In 1994, she developed Songaya Sound Medicine, a system of using specific music frequencies as therapy, voice analysis, and developed the Songaya CDs, a series of sound meditations used as an effective healing tool for her clients. She presents sound healing seminars in the United States, Mexico, Holland, England, and I know in France, and she maintains a private sound counseling practice. She leads pilgrimages to Egypt, England, and Scotland, where her groups experience the transformative power of sound. I so enjoyed my time with Ani and Rennes Le Chateau recently and our little duet playing at the local cafe, listening to her knowledge of the history of the area in relationship to the Mary Magdalene mysteries was a highlight of my trip. Thank you, Ani. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to you, as I know that you have a lot to share with us. It's all yours, Ani.
Thank you, Christina. And I'm sort of bowled over by that long introduction. I better come up with something intelligent here. thank you for having me, and hello to all of you around the world. I was just recently in Denmark doing some presentations on sound healing, so sorry I missed you there. So today, or this month's presentation, is focused on the muse Urania. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. I found some amazing things. I didn't really know much about her, but found that she was related, according to 5th century BC documents, to the lyre and ruling that stringed instrument. And that it fostered the light of human excellence. So I thought that was kind of cool, relating to the harpers around the world. Also that her son, Linus, was honored by all the singers and harpers. And there was also a relationship between Urania and the history and use of praise song. So I guess I have a question to all of those out there. How many of you are incorporating the voice with the harp?
Jan Joy, you have the mic.
I'm not sure what to say, except that I really started with my voice and then came to the harp as kind of a way to accompany the voice. And I first became interested in sound healing through toning and the voice. So
beautiful.
That's how I came to it.
Beautiful, Jan. You know, it's interesting that in the study of the history of sound therapy, I have found so many references in the Pythagorean and the Platonic and the different Hermetic mystery schools using sound, that it was always the stringed instrument with the voice that was used to minister particular tones for healing. And for, as Jeff was ending with, which was so perfect, bringing coherence out of chaos, bringing a state of coherency or harmony, which could be related as health, happiness, greater potential for success, creativity. So for me, I find that combination is really wonderful and has an ancient foundation in sound healing, although it's not necessary. But there is, you know, it's not necessary that you all have to play an instrument and sing, but there was one interesting thing that came to me during one of my classes that I was giving in outside of Portland, Oregon years ago, and one of the women in the group had just returned from South Africa and working with the Zulu medicine man, and I was struck with what she said when he was working with patients or clients that would come to him for all sorts of healing. He didn't ask them when their symptoms occurred or what their symptoms were. He just simply asked them, when did you stop singing? And I found that just really, really profound. So that was one of the first questions I had.
Leah van der Velde from Holland, she also uses her voice. Leah, want to say hello to Ani?
Yes. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I'm a singer, first of all. I was a concert singer. I studied singing, and I took up the harp only later to combine it. It was a lifelong passion to be able to combine singing with harp playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it only came about from say 10 years ago I started the harp, and then 5 years ago I was able to sing along, because I took a bit of time to get the harp in my fingers.
Yes.
But I must say that it's such a wonderful combination, and you can see the effects on people when you combine the strings with the voice. I was today playing in a nursing home, the Rudolf Steiner nursing home in The Hague today,
mm-hmm.
for Christmas mm-hmm. songs. And you can just see the shiny eyes, and people get so you know, emotional in a positive sense.
Yeah.
When they hear the voice and the strings, it's you can't explain it really, but it's the most magnificent thing. It's wonderful. Yeah.
It is. It's an ancient combination. And you're reminding me of being in Poland at the bedside of hospice children who were in their last stage of cancer and leukemia, and singing like a mother would sing to her baby just brought such light and love out of their eyes. It was so beautiful. And other situations in rest homes where a man from India who was a dear friend of mine, and he was a famous yoga teacher and dancer from India, and he was bedridden in his later years, and it was very sad. And we took the harp in there one day and started doing a Sanskrit chant with the harp and the voices. And he rose up out of bed and proceeded to do a blessing on us in the Hindu style, and it was so gorgeous to see him start to move his body and rise up, you know, like out of the ashes, the phoenix rises again. Anyone else out there using the voice with the harp?
Yes, we have Maria Barton from Holland. Maria, you have a mic?
Yes, at around 1990, I started overtone chanting with the Dutchman Benny Becker, and for some years also with Yegor Reshnikov, a Russian teacher who lived in France and studied the Gregorian chanting, very early Gregorian chanting, and he deciphered the handwriting. And that brought me onto the really essential qualities of the overtones and harmonics. And I wanted to play also, and then I chose the lyre since the harp was not an option for me at that time. And I love to use this together. And I played at Hospice Breda for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, I just wanted to basically find out how many, because I find that in these ancient schools of sound that they were using both. Sometimes they had the singers as separate people, and then they brought in the harps, or sometimes they used simply poetry being recited in a musical sort of cadence, and then the harps or lyra or whatever other stringed instrument would accompany them. But I just found that this was a pattern in throughout history. Today, though, what I wanted to focus more on is using sound for healing, and in those ancient mystery schools, the Hermetic schools, or Neoplatonic as they were termed in Italy during the Renaissance, they always also combined the making the music coherent with the patterns of the heavens, the old Hermetic as above, so below. And this has actually become my focus for the last 20 years. And discovering how music can be a reflection or mirror of the cosmos in general as well as specifically within individuals. And it's a huge subject, so I'll try to keep it simple. But basically I have sent over to Christina some images, and I don't know if all of you have those handy to look at today.
I sent those over to everybody.
Good. Thank you, Christina. And my apologies to all of you for being such a last minute here, but I just got back from Europe and ended up with a cold in bed, so it was all very last minute. There is an image of the zodiac on the ceiling at Dendera, Egypt. Now, what I find interesting about all of these sound schools, these mystery schools, Pythagoras and Plato's academies, they all had the same theme of working with the as above, the patterns in the celestial realm or the heavens, the stars, the planets, and their mirroring on the earth as music in general, and as music that sings within each one of us. The first image is the image, as I said, of the zodiac at Dendera, which is on the ceiling. And the image I sent is actually a papyrus that has been painted of this image. So this was at least 4,000 years ago. And the Egyptians were teaching people like Pythagoras and Plato in, what was it, the 4th, 5th, 6th centuries B.C., and they had a long history of using the as above, so below. So the first image shows that pattern of the heavens. And in that particular temple, you have a literal mirroring of music reflecting the patterns in the sky because of the zodiac on the ceiling. And then in the temple itself, you have more depictions and on the pillars and on the walls of the temple of musical instruments, many, many harps, rattles called sistrum, drums, voices. So this is where I wanted to start, to just show the basic connection that this has been used for thousands and thousands of years. The next image is the Tsongaya sound wheel, showing how we've been taking this ancient principle of the music from the heavens on earth and making it rather literal in this wheel. Now, I want to preface what I'm saying today with that I would never believe that this is the only system that is valid and relevant to our work with music. It is one system that I have found that works. You will find other systems that relate different colors to the frequencies. And in my understanding, I have an astrophysicist friend who said, oh, no, you have the note C, do, as being red, but it's really green. Well, when you look at it in an astrophysics, a physics way, and you chart out the frequencies and what their color correlations are, you actually have green. But this is how we work with it here on this realm, and there's actually a relevance to the C being red. Of course, we have had red as our harp strings for how long, Christina? Centuries. I know the old...
I think at least since 1721.
Okay. We have this old association, and then the F strings were always green in the Celtic harps. Well, that would be the correlation that I'm using today and a lot of us are using. So it is one perspective, but I don't want to present the idea that this is the only way at all. Basically, this is showing a wheel of correspondence. And the basis of how I work, I'm just a troubadour that travels the world, but I got really fascinated with how sound can specifically be used for healing. And I studied with a woman named Sherry Edwards in 1991. I studied with someone named Fabienne Mamon, who was an early pioneer in sound therapy, and many, many others, and put together this system. And basically what we do, and this is based on the research that Sherry Edwards had done about 3 decades ago, I think, she found that when she listened to people's voices, there were particular frequencies that were dropping out, and certain frequencies that she would sing back to the person of their missing tones would have a dramatic effect on them. So she created a system whereby we analyze voices to find the missing tones. Now, basically, if you are playing music, you're already receiving a lot of frequencies, so that's an excellent form of therapy. And if you're singing, it's even better. So for those of you who are not singing or using your voices, going back to that Zuni medicine man, when did you stop singing? I would just suggest humming along with what you're playing periodically to get that synchronicity between the brain, the voice, the ear, and the tones that you're working with. This can be a really, really good exercise. Jill Peirce, the woman in London who was, actually she is married to Rupert Sheldrake, and she was teaching overtone chanting many, many years ago. And she said that when we are making a sound, we're connecting the circuits in the brain with the ear, the voice, the brain, and making a full circuit. So it can be a really a healing exercise to just hum along with what you're playing.
Ani, yeah. Let me interject here. This system here is very similar to the system that you have in the harp therapy manual that Kay Gardner also put together. she had also done a lot of research of different systems around the world. And again, like Ani, Kay said that there are different systems, but for the majority of the systems, based on the Hindu, based on the Asian, based on physics, based on channeling, that she came up with that circle that you'll see in the book. And this system here fits right in with that same system that you're looking at. And it's the one that most people find resonates in that whole realm of different sounds and flavors and aromas and color therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that using this system is a pretty good indication of being right on. And what I like about this particular chart here, Ani, is the relationship of the various astrological constellations.
Mm-hmm.
We have something called the healing tree that's being developed even as we talk right now, where people are going to be able to put all of this information in as far as the different planets and different constellations and sounds, so we can start getting a bigger picture of all this work which you've so nicely put together here. Thank you.
Well, fantastic, and thank you for mentioning Kay Gardner, because she was an inspiration to me in the beginning of the 80s, I think. She did a wonderful body of work, so that's nice to hear that it correlates with what she found. I'm just very careful because some cultures, like the Mayans, relate different tones to different energy centers and so forth, and so I always like to preface that. I'd like to, now I can't even remember which was the next file I sent. I got all those images. Was it the brainwave?
The next one on that particular was the Monochord by Flood.
Oh, yes. So Robert Flood was an alchemist, writer, researcher, and he followed very closely. The Monochord is this image showing the connection between the celestial bodies, say, for instance, the sun, the moon, the Saturn, Uranus, and the musical tones. And the monochord, of course, some of you are familiar with, and showing the harmonic intervals of the strings. So this is just an example to show how he was following very closely the work of Pythagoras and Marsilio Ficino. And I was just in Italy, and I was really kind of feeling all of the tremendous opening that occurred during the Renaissance in Italy regarding this work of working with sound frequencies, musical instruments, and the celestial patterns. And so I included that image just to give you a little example of those correlations. I wanted to get a little more specific, though, in how this has worked with people and groups, and creating the state of coherence and harmony. During the mid-90s, we did a series of explorations at the University of Washington with Dr. Juan Acosta. And he was set up a brain lab where he tested brain wave response, brain states, and how they changed with different modalities. He brought in healers, shamans, dowsers, musicians, aromatherapists, and it was a fascinating work because each one of the subjects that he tested created a coherent brain state using aromatherapy, sending healing energy. When the shaman went into an altered state before he did his healing work, everyone reached similar brain states. And I sent over an image that shows the amplitude. It's a yellow image showing the amplitude of the different brain states. And this was using the Tsongaya sound CDs in the background and then toning along with them. And what we did is we tested the brain before listening to the sound. And I should say what these recordings are is they're simply different sound meditations, 12 sound meditations, based on this idea of the Tsongaya tone wheel that you have. So doing 12 sound meditations for the 12 musical tones. So I'm not remembering which sound we put on at that time, but we put one of the CDs on. So the file that shows, it's not the musical brain states one, it's the other attached yellow one. And what was really interesting is when the CD would play, which was comprised of simply harp tones. I'll do a little example here. Here's just a C tone, and then the fifth of G. So the C track would be a series of different intervals based on the fundamental C. And when we put that on in the background and toned with it, the brain immediately spiked in the theta, which is usually occurring after a deep meditation. You can get an alpha state right away in a meditation, but the theta usually takes longer, and the doctor who was doing the testing was quite struck with that doing toning or listening to these slow harp intervals, mainly using the fundamental tone, the fifth and the octave, brought the brain into a very altered state very quickly, within about a minute of listening to this. And the toning with it had the same effect. So by the end of the session, which is about a minute and a half, the balanced levels of alpha and theta states were perfectly coherent. And what he found in this series of experiments is that the healers, the shamans, the musicians, all the different varieties of healers that were tested, this state of alpha-theta was the state where healing could take place, where people came into a state of harmony, relaxation, stress melted away, and there was the opportunity or the potential to be healed, to be happy, to be in perfect harmony with whatever we're here to do. And
Ani, that's the last line at the bottom where the theta and the alpha come into harmony with each other. And is that using both the voice and the harp at that point?
This is just using, actually this part was just listening. This particular map was reflecting the changes in the brain by just listening to the Tsongaya track, which had the harp. And actually, there on the recording, there is the voice doing overtone chanting, another voice doing a mantra, but all in that C tone. And there's also a didgeridoo kind of soft in the background. But it was just through the listening of that sound meditation that brought the brain into a coherent state. One can also do that with toning.
Mm-hmm. And can I ask what the C3, the CZ, the C4, PZ, and P4 are?
Oh, that's Dr. Acosta's stuff. I really
okay, that's his stuff.
Sure.
You'll have to worry about that. What we're looking at here from the top line to the bottom line is a period of time from,
yeah.
I'm trying to understand. So it's a period of time starting off at the top and seeing how the alpha is rising.
Actually, the alpha, the green is the theta.
Yeah.
And the alpha is the red.
Right.
So we got larger peaks in the theta, which was really unusual. So going from the left, we're showing delta is blue.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I usually do in the PowerPoint. Same thing with Jeff. It's a little abstract.
Yeah.
The green is theta. The red bar is alpha. And the orange is beta. So on the right, you would see the beta brain state, which is more of a normal brain state. The red would signify more of a relaxed, in-tune state of being. The green would reflect a deep meditation, the state that healers or shamans or dowsers go into when they're really in the zone, as we say. And so just listening to these sound meditations with the harp and the voice brought that state. Now, I should add that the intention is a big part of this. When I've been researching the Pythagorean sound healing schools, they absolutely, and Ficino's Renaissance schools in Italy, they always stress the importance of intention. So, you know, incorporating the breath, the intention, the conscious relaxation, it just automatically brings all those things into play. But the intention, when one is producing music or playing music, is essential, as I know you work with there.
Mm-hmm. This is fascinating. Thank you for sharing this.
You're welcome. And I just